two leaders of a Rastafarian church in Madison were arrested this week after the church was raided by police. They now face tentative drug-related charges, including delivery of marijuana. They had provided marijuana to parishioners in exchange for donations, they said. They say the practice is constitutionally protected because marijuana is considered a sacrament in their church. Howard Schwaber is a professor of political science and legal studies at UW-Madison. He's also an affiliate faculty member of the UW Law School. Howard, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, let's look at this claim from members of this self-described Rastafarian church in Madison. They say they use marijuana, in effect, as a sacrament in their religious practice. Therefore, it should be constitutionally protected. Do you see it as likely that a court would accept that argument?
Right. So we've got to break this down into two distinct parts. One is the U.S. Constitution. One is the Wisconsin Constitution. Under the U.S. Constitution, there is no argument. And what I mean by that is the Supreme Court has said very, very clearly, states have no obligation to give accommodations to religious practices with respect to generally applicable laws. So, for example, if you imagine prohibition, a ban on alcohol, you know, states may make an exception for sacramental uses of alcohol, but they don't have to. By extension, there's absolutely no obligation under the U.S. Constitution for Wisconsin to make an exception for sacramental uses of marijuana under a generally applicable state law. But the Wisconsin Constitution is different. The Wisconsin Constitution has been held by the Wisconsin State Supreme Court to be more protective of religious freedom than the U.S. Constitution. That was in a 1996 case. So under the Wisconsin Constitution, there are two questions. First, the church would have to show that they're acting on the basis of a genuine religious belief. And that's a topic that judges generally are hesitant to weigh in on. That is, we don't want courts to be judging people's descriptions of their religious beliefs or practices and saying, no, this is not really what your religion requires, or dictating, you know, what constitutes a sincere religion. But the second part is, even if this is a religious sacrament, Wisconsin can still punish it if Wisconsin can show a compelling interest. And so a year ago, or July in 2018, in Indiana, there was a church called the First Church of Cannabis. A case came to an Indiana court, and the judge there had no trouble finding that Indiana had a compelling interest in uniform application of drug laws. And I expect a similar outcome here, frankly. That is, I expect Wisconsin will argue, will not lean heavily on the argument this is, about whether this is or is not a true religion, but rather will simply say, look, we have a compelling interest in preventing the use of marijuana. And that being the case, we have no obligation to grant these people an exemption.
Do we have examples in Wisconsin, or I guess beyond, where courts have said, yes, this is generally illegal in our state, but we will give this wiggle room for religious reasons?
Well, not specifically for marijuana, at least not that I've found. There have been a number of cases in California, including several involving Rastafarian churches, but the churches have always lost. On the other hand, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court established this principle of stronger than U.S. Federal protection in the context of employment discrimination. And there are several cases, including one from 2012, which the Wisconsin State Supreme Court has said religious employers are not obliged to comply with anti-discrimination statutes where the employment issue involves the religious operations of their church. That's as close as we have to a direct precedent in Wisconsin, at least that I know of. But my expectation, frankly, is that this rather politically conservative state Supreme Court will simply say, well, marijuana is different, drugs are different, this is a matter of criminal law enforcement and what are called state police powers, which are the traditional powers of the states to establish limits of permissible conduct. And I strongly suspect we'll end up with an outcome that says the Wisconsin state constitution does protect employers, religious employers, from the operations of some anti-discrimination laws, but does not protect the Rastafarian church from the operation of the anti-marijuana law.
Talking to Howard Schwaber from UW-Madison, looking at religious liberty and where it can come into conflict in our legal system. A case in Wisconsin and Madison in particular, a Rastafarian church in Madison raided, a couple leaders arrested under a variety of marijuana-related charges. Now, you mentioned that discrimination law. That seems like it's been the frontier of religious liberty laws, both in the courts and in legislatures, state and national. Do you see that as kind of the main flashpoint when it comes to when can an organization be exempted from regulation because of religious reasons?
Well, it's not the only one. That certainly has been a flashpoint recently. So I mentioned a case from Indiana from last summer, and of course that involved the famous or infamous religious freedom law that Mike Pence signed into law, and that many critics claimed would protect discriminating employers. So right now, I mean, these days, yeah, that's a very current issue, and it's the forefront of a lot of debates. But historically, if you go back even 5, 10, 15 years, there are a slew of areas where claims of religious free exercise have been brought up to assert an entitlement to an exemption from a generally applicable law. Think about something like Hobby Lobby, for example, whether employers can be required to pay the insurance costs of contraception. You know, that was about basically the same question.
And do we have a lot of case law built up over the course of American history on issues for various churches, maybe for laws or reasons that aren't as relevant in 2019?
Sure. Well, under the U.S. Constitution, there's a really sharp break. Prior to 1990, the rule was anytime a state wants to apply a law in a way that will put a burden on religious practice, the state has to meet a very, very high level of justification. It's called strict scrutiny. In 1990, the Supreme Court issued an opinion written by Justice Scalia for a majority of the court that said that's not true. States have no constitutional obligation to provide accommodations at all. They can do so if they want to, but they don't have to. So a very famous case in the early 1970s is Wisconsin versus Yoder, in which the U.S. Supreme Court held that the state of Wisconsin could not compel Amish families to send their kids to high school. And that was, right, there was a generally applicable law saying up until a certain age, everyone had to attend school. The Amish were claiming a religious exemption, and the Supreme Court said, yes, you're entitled to this exemption. But that was under the old pre-1990 rules. Post-1990, all of the history of analysis of free exercise protection under the U.S. Constitution is largely rendered irrelevant, which is why I'm focusing so much on the Wisconsin state constitution, mm-hmm. because if this Rastafarian church has a claim, that will be its basis.
Now, you said that courts are reluctant to judge whether an organization meets some kind of standard of what constitutes a religious organization or what practice meets the definition of a religious faith. That said, I could see a case where somebody set up a fake religious organization in order to conduct some kind of illegal activity. I think some people have accused this case at Madison. We can't judge that here, of course, using this as a front, a cover for the exchange of cash for marijuana. So is there a case where a court might say, wait a minute, this religious veneer is phony?
Well, there is. There are a couple. So I don't know a specific Wisconsin case, but at the federal level, there was a U.S. Supreme Court case in which a church claiming to be devoted to a Native American religion wanted to get an exemption against laws about using peyote, and that was rejected. The reason was the church had not existed very long; it had only a few adherents. It met in somebody's house. Essentially, without quite saying it in so many words, the Supreme Court said, "Look, we don't think this is a real church." In the Indiana case that I mentioned, that involved a church called the First Church of Cannabis. And certainly in the press coverage, there was a considerable amount of speculation that this was not a real church. This was just an excuse to smoke marijuana. The Indiana judge in that case refused to address that question because she didn't find it necessary. She just focused on the compelling state interest. So, yes, there is some precedent. And if the Wisconsin courts wanted to lean on that question, they could talk about how long this religion has existed, how many adherents it has, whether the members of the church engage in frequent and regular religious practice together. If the Wisconsin courts were to lean on that question, that is, take it upon themselves to say, we don't believe yours is a true religion, that could raise U.S. constitutional questions. But my suspicion is they won't do that. My suspicion is they will simply lean on the second half, the compelling interest half, and say, look, we're not going to touch that question. All we need to say is that Wisconsin has a sufficient compelling interest, and the argument is over.
We're talking to Howard Schwaber of UW-Madison's Law School about how far religious freedom protections go. That's after a Rastafarian church in Madison claimed their ability to practice their religion was infringed upon when police raided the church and arrested its leaders this week on marijuana charges. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of religious freedom claims in this case in particular? And also, when religious freedom claims come into conflict with the law, where should the state, where should courts put the weight? Should we give a lot of leeway on religious liberty? Or if it's illegal in one case, is religion not an excuse? What questions do you have about how all this works at the state and federal level? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about a Rastafarian church in Madison. Leaders say their religious rights were infringed on after organizers were arrested for marijuana-related charges. They claim that marijuana is part of their religious practice and therefore constitutionally protected. Howard Schwaber is with us, constitutional law expert with UW-Madison, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this case? Do you think the church and its leaders have a valid claim to religious freedom? Do you think that they should be allowed to legally use and distribute marijuana under the auspices of religious practice, or no? And what questions do you have for our guest about the broader issue of religious liberty and how it works out in the court system? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Now, Howard, we're seeing more and more states legalizing marijuana, and looks like Illinois, our neighbors to the south, might be on the verge of doing that. Is that something that people could point to on their behalf in a case like this?
Well, so that raises a really interesting question. I've been treating this idea of a compelling interest as kind of a black box and waving it. But it's a real serious question. What does a state government have to show to demonstrate a compelling interest in doing something? In the case of something like drugs, however, generally speaking, there's a long-standing principle that individual states have the freedom to choose for themselves their priorities. So, for example, Michigan has legalized marijuana. Illinois is considering legalizing marijuana. There are a number of other states that have done so. But rather than being an argument that says, therefore, other states' interest is lessened, this becomes an argument about federalism, that states are laboratories of democracy and each state gets to decide for itself how it wants to deal with law enforcement issues. So while I understand the argument, and it's certainly kind of tempting in a way, within our constitutional tradition, the precedents hold that Wisconsin is free to determine for itself what is or is not a compelling interest. And again, given the political makeup of our current Supreme Court, I strongly suspect they will side with law enforcement.
Let's bring on a caller now. Sid is with us in Madison. Sid, hi.
Hey, so I would just say that, you know, religion has to have more merit than just a few people saying we're a religion now so we can do whatever we want. So, like, you know, even you could even argue that persecution is a merit of a religion becoming official. I mean, it's certainly the story of the Jews, Christianity in Roman times. I mean, there's a thing about persecution that almost grants legitimacy to a religion.
Sid, thanks for the call. So that's getting into that argument, Howard, that you said courts generally don't want to get into deciding what does and doesn't constitute a religion in the face of the law.
Well, that's right. I mean, Sid raises an obviously important point, and one that outside of courts, sort of in ordinary conversation, you know, feels like common sense. You can tell the difference between a 3,000 or a 2,000-year-old religious tradition and something somebody invented last week to get a tax exemption. And so you might think that judges and courts and prosecutors would feel perfectly free to say, well, this one's a religion and that one's not. The reason that gets so complicated is it's not just about what does or doesn't count as a religion, but also what does or does not a religion require. So, for example, someone claims my version of Protestant Christianity requires that I not drive cars on Sundays. There's good reason not to want government officials to say, no, that's not how Christianity ought to be understood, right? There's really, really good, deeply rooted reason central to the First Amendment that we don't want government officials deciding what religious orthodoxy requires. And so to avoid anything tending in that direction, courts have had a tendency to lean over backwards to avoid even addressing the question of whether something is or is not a legitimate religion, and focusing instead on the question of what's the strength of the state's interest.
Thanks for that call, Sid. We'll go now to Gary in South Milwaukee. Gary, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to say about this, Gary?
Well, I mean, I understand religious freedom is one thing. I served the Army and the Army Reserve for 9 years of my life and was to, you know, constitutionally the rights of Americans. But my question is, does that then allow ancient Aztecs to start making sacrifices of people on an altar to an Aztec god that's been dead for thousands of years?
Gary, thanks for the call. In just our last minute, Howard, that compelling interest you're talking about, you know, could run anywhere from an extreme case like human sacrifice to, yeah, our religion doesn't allow us to sign particular kinds of government forms. There's kind of a sliding scale on compelling interest.
That's exactly right. Some cases are easy. Human sacrifice, my religion doesn't allow me to pay taxes, my religion allows me to engage in child abuse. You know, these are easy cases, and of course, have no trouble dismissing those claims. Smoking marijuana is somewhere in the middle. And I think you phrased it exactly right. There's a kind of a scale, and the question is, where on the scale of a compelling state interest does this particular case fall?
Gary, thanks a lot for that call. And Howard, thanks so much for joining us again today.
Oh, my pleasure.
We've been talking to Howard Schwaber, professor of political science and legal studies at UW-Madison and affiliate faculty member of the UW Law School. He was with us today to talk about a federal lawsuit from a Rastafarian church in Madison who say their ability to use and distribute marijuana to their members is part of their religious practice and should therefore be constitutionally protected. That church was raided by police earlier this week. Two of its leaders were arrested on multiple charges. Still time for you to let us know what you think about the case, what you think the outcome should be, what do you think about the arguments here. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org. Technology was supposed to transform learning, but in some cases it can get in the way, especially in large lecture halls where it can be easy to tune out and play a video game, watch a movie, or go onto social media. To prevent that, at least one school in the Big Ten is banning certain websites in their classrooms. But UW-Madison is trying to keep students' attention another way. Shemaine Mills reports.
The days of pen and paper in the classroom aren't over, but now you're more likely to find laptops in a college lecture hall, and not always for taking notes. It's also used for drawing in this UW-Madison anatomy class taught by Professor Julie Stamm.
We're going to do a lot of drawing and labeling. You'll see that there are templates posted. There was a template today. There's templates posted for the upper extremity. There will be the same for the lower extremity.
The class is designed to be interactive so students pay attention and more of the material can sink in. Technology is there to help with learning, not hinder it. But sometimes social media sneaks its way in. It is, after all, a room full of college students, and the fear of missing out, or FOMO, can be strong. Kaylee Nidas, a junior from Kokana, is enrolled in the anatomy class. It's fast-paced, so she doesn't have time to check Facebook or watch movies, but she admits it's tempting.
I think it's hard for a lot of us to like disconnect, even if it is for just a lecture period.
Because social media is designed to be convenient, Nita says it's available even when you probably shouldn't be looking at it.
A lot of people have computers that you can text on your computer now, too. So in a class that I take notes on my computer, so sometimes it's even hard to not just take a peek at that when you're sitting in class.
And that's what many instructors are up against. Is their PowerPoint or lecture as interesting as, say, the latest episode for Game of Thrones? Purdue University's taking no chances. In large lecture halls on the Indiana campus, entertainment websites like Hulu, Netflix, and Pandora are blocked by the campus Wi-Fi. Purdue's IT director, Mark Sonstein, says students on those sites during class were hogging bandwidth needed for academic purposes.
Yeah, so last year we received concerning complaints and things like that about the capability of Wi-Fi and the lack of availability to connect to it or slowness on the network, especially in our large lecture halls.
Surprisingly, Seinstein says they didn't get any complaints from students that certain websites were being blocked. Over the years, UW-Madison has had requests to do something similar, but hasn't, says Brian Rust, the former spokesman for UW's Department of Information Technology.
To help students, staff, and faculty, we want to provide the best network that we can and not put restrictions on it.
Back in that anatomy class, upbeat music played while students filed in. Most students don't realize they're in a special class designed to keep their attention and battle all those distractions. But Nikita Patel knows one thing. She likes this class better than other big lecture classes she's taken.
In the past, there have been lectures where professors will just read off of slides, and, you know, that's not very engaging, so students might look on their phones or check social media.
But in this class, students are kept busy. Every 20 minutes, the class shifts gears. There's lecturing, then there's drawing. There's also group problem solving. And students sit close to the instructor. No one's allowed to sit far away in the balcony. Teaching assistants roam the aisles, ready to help students with questions. This type of active learning became popular in the 90s. At UW, it's referred to as the REACH program and has dramatically boosted attendance in large classes. But it doesn't eliminate lecturing or magically make difficult entry-level courses popular. However, surveys show student distraction is lower. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up Monday here on Central Time, there's been a lot of talk about socialism and democratic socialism in the last year in politics. We'll dig into the different meanings of socialism and how it all fits into American history. Wisconsin Democrats will hold their annual convention this weekend. They'll look back on their statewide election wins and ahead at the big 2020 elections. WPR's own Laurel White will be there, and she'll bring us the big stories on Monday. And we'll get the latest news from around Wisconsin Public Radio on the June edition of Mondays with Mike. And you can call in with your questions and comments, too. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.